welcome. Thanks for joining me. This is Mike Gaston. We're doing an episode of The Currency, my podcast, and this is episode number 143 of the podcast. Glad to have you guys along. I'm recording this on Thursday, March 21st. Time now is about noon or just after 12 o'clock. We're going to talk about a few things. We're going to talk about BlackRock and Texas going to war. Also, I want to talk a little bit about the Biden admin. The administration just announced they're going to forgive $6 billion in student loans for a specific set of the public. And then also, I want to talk a little bit about Reddit. If you're familiar with the messaging board Reddit, we've all heard of Reddit, I'm sure. If you've used it or not, I don't know. But Reddit is doing an IPO, an initial public offering. They're going public today. And I want to talk about that for a few minutes. Hope you guys are doing great. If you're here in the chat, do me a favor, say hello. Let me know if the audio is okay, video, etc. I'm not going to spend too much time trying to figure all that out. I think it's according to my instruments, it's looking pretty good. But I want to kind of jump into it. But let me know if everything sounds okay, just so that I'm good. What we're going to do, and for those of you that are watching this either after the fact or those of you listening to the podcast on audio device, I'm doing The Currency now as a live stream on my YouTube channel. If you want to participate in the live, that's great. You just got to subscribe to the channel, turn on notifications, and it'll let you know when there's a stream scheduled. I scheduled this one yesterday for today at noon, and here we are. So if not, no big deal. But glad to have you guys along. Today, I want to talk about a few things, as I just said in the open, but let's start with the Biden administration and their announcement that they're going to forgive $6 billion in student loans. I don't have all the details. I have enough here. We can talk about it. Essentially, the Biden administration is saying, hey, if you're a public service worker, meaning if you're a nurse, you're a policeman, a fireman, you're a teacher, anything like that, we're going to forgive your student debt. We're going to forgive your student debt. Now, that equals about $6 billion in debt that's out there right now. And you might say, well, Mike, that's a nice thing. We need teachers. We need firemen and nurses. And I would agree with you. We need those jobs filled. But here's the problem that I kind of have with some of this. It's one thing like when your parents loan you some money. You're young, you're getting started, and your parents like, hey, we're going to give you a little bit of money to help you out. I know you need to get a car, need a down payment for your first apartment, so we're going to help you out. Now, that's fine. That's your parents' money, and they can do whatever they want with it, and they can sit and be hard-nosed later and say, you owe me every nickel, and in fact, we have they could set it up so that they've got, they're getting interest payments from you. I mean, your parents can be tough if they want to. Or they can turn around and say, hey, look, at the end of, the first year or so, and you're doing well, and you've been making your little payments back, and they're happy. They could say, hey, we want to help you out here. We're going to forgive that debt. Maybe you owe them $5,000. Maybe you owe them $10,000. They're going to say, you know what? You're a good kid. You've always been a good kid. You work hard. We're proud of you. You're just getting started. We're going to forgive that debt so that you can be freed up to live your best life. And that's cool. If your parents do that, that's cool because they earned that money. They went out, they worked, they invested, they saved. They did a bunch of things to make sure that they had that money to loan you. And they can look at their own situation and say, we're actually in pretty good shape. We don't carry a lot of debt. We're in a position where we can be generous to our children, and it's a pleasure to forgive that $10,000 loan or that $3,000 loan. There's nothing immoral about that. That's good. Now you do get parents sometimes that spoil children, and the kids know, oh, I'm going to ask for money. My parents will give it to me. They never ask me to pay it back. I never have to. I can cry a sob story. I can manipulate them. They fall for it every time. We're not talking about that. We're just saying a healthy situation. And, your parents forgive the debt. Okay. What's different here about the government is, number one, they don't know you. They're not related to you. They don't know if you're a good kid, a bad kid, a hard worker, a lie about. They have no idea what you are. Okay. So that's one thing. So first of all, you may or may not be deserving as a person of forgiveness of your debt. But the more important factor here is your parents earn their money. The government is forgiving debt. What does that really mean? You see, the banks aren't going to just write that debt off. They're not going to say, well, $6 billion, don't worry about it. We loan those student loans out, but we're just going to forgive those debts. No problem. No, the government, in forgiving that debt, is going to have to pay it off for you. So if you're a teacher or a fireman or a policeman or a police person, police officer, I think is the technical term, and you just benefited from the Biden administration's announcement today that they're going to forgive this debt, they're saying forgive it, meaning we're just going to make it go away. Someone has to pay for that. That's not going away. Someone has to pay for that debt. And that means the government's going to pay for it. Well, where does the government earn its money? How does the government make money? Other than printing it, other than using a printing press and printing money, which debases the money that's in your pocket, how does the government earn money? Well, it doesn't. The government does not create wealth. The government does not earn money. The government takes money from you and I, the citizens. It taxes us. So the government amasses wealth through collecting taxes. It says, oh, you got $100 today for some work that you did? Beautiful. We need about $30 of that. Thank you. Very much appreciated. Now, I'm a little tender to this today because my wife and I went and signed off our taxes. We moved to South Carolina a couple years ago. I had a buddy back north that was doing my taxes, a good friend of mine. He's a CPA, has a firm. He's a partner in a large firm now. But Chris would do my taxes for years. Last year, we got together April, and it was funny. I was thinking, now that I've moved to South Carolina, I probably need to shift and find a local accountant. At the same time, Chris had merged with this large partnership, and they were elevating the kind of the level of people that they're working with. And Chris probably looked at mine. I spend a few thousand, like $2,000-$3,000 a year in, you know, accounting fees. It was probably looking at me and going, I kind of need to make room for a bigger client, someone that pays $10,000 a year or more. So we both sat down. I went up to New York to do some work and was going to meet with him for taxes. We both sat down ready to kind of quote unquote fire each other, and not in a hostile way, but we were going to let each other go. Funny enough, Chris put his cards on the table first, which really put me in a great position. So he said, hey, and I could tell he can hardly breathe. He's hemming and hawing, and he's like, he's trying to explain the whole thing. And I acted offended and outraged. I was so relieved. I was like, oh, good. I don't have to be the bad guy here. Chris gets to be the bad guy. But I made him pay for it. I was like, outrage. How dare you? Are you firing me after all we've been through together, all the money I've paid? Like, I acted just totally outraged. And he was just, you know, it wasn't very nice of me, but I thought I'd have a little fun. Then I told him, nah, dude, I'm pulling your leg. I was actually going to, I was thinking of moving on myself. Now, anyway, this year's our first year working with a new CPA, great guy, Richard Holmes, if you're here in Charleston. Shout out to Richard Holmes, CPA. But anyway, got my business taxes done. I'm an S-Corp, so any profits I get from my business, even if they don't go necessarily into my pocket, my profits that the business shows flows into my personal. And so I had to go in today, my wife and I, to sign our tax returns, our personal. We're going to be away on a trip on the 15th, so we get it done early. And I owe a chunk of change. I owe a big chunk of change, which is a good thing, I guess, in the sense that it was a good year last year. But it's not a good thing to have to give up a chunk of the money that you work so hard to earn. Anyway, so I'm a little, you know, like, tender to this. If the Biden administration is saying that they're going to forgive $6 billion in student loans, there are two issues here. The first is, it is not their money to make this decision with. When your parents forgive a debt, they're trying to help you get started. Hey, you're a good kid. You're a hard worker. It's their money, and they can choose to do with it as they wish. The government is taking your money and my money. They're taking taxes from us, and then they're choosing a class of people, we'll call them a class of people, not, I don't mean in the classic sense like upper class, middle class, but they're choosing a group of people to say, hey, this group right here, we're going to take this money that we took from all the other citizens, your neighbors and your family members, and we're going to use this to forgive your debt. Now, you could say, but Mike, these are public service workers. We need these people. But there's a subtle dynamic that starts to happen here. So the first issue I have, and we'll talk about that in a second, the first issue I have is This is the government taking your money to pay somebody else's debt. Somebody else made a decision. No one put a gun to anybody's head and said, you have to take on student loan. So these people could have went to become a teacher, but they could have partied their whole time. They could have racked up all kinds of student debt. They could have lived in ways that were not responsible. They could have been very responsible. I'm not saying that everybody that goes to college is a schmuck. I'm just saying that, like, they made their own decisions. And now the government, the state is saying, you know what, we're going to forgive all your debt. The decisions that you made, we're going to forgive your debt just because you took on a certain kind of job. Well, what's to say that a firefighter is more important than a doctor? What's to say that a doctor is more important than an accountant? What's to say that an accountant is more important than, I don't know, an entrepreneur? Once you start doing this, once you start privileging, because this is essentially what it is, you're privileging a certain set of society and saying, don't worry about it. The decisions that you made, the career choices that you made as a kid, and the debt that you took on as a kid, and that's a whole nother discussion. We're not going to penalize you for that. In fact, we're going to let you off the hook. Now, everybody else in society, they have to keep that debt. They have to keep it. They have to pay it. But you, my friends, you are off the hooks as nurses, doctors, teachers, or sorry, not doctors, nurses, teachers, firefighters, police officers, et cetera. I'm all for these people. We need these people in our society. But I think once you start to privilege them, now what ends up happening, and the second thing I'm concerned about around this is once you have a set of people in society that the government is privileging, will those people have a sense of obligation to who? To whom? Is it to you and I, or is it to the government? Do you really want your police force feeling like they owe more to the government than they do to the people they're serving? You know, if somebody's got $50,000 in debt, $80,000 in debt to get through college, I mean, people get six-figure bills at the end of college. And the government comes around and says, hey, we're going to forgive that. We're going to forgive a big chunk of it. We're going to forgive all of it. Do we really want a society of law enforcement and safety and security people and healthcare people that have more of a sense of obligation to the state than they do to the individuals of the society, the citizens and the residents and the people here that make the society work? Do we really want that dynamic? Do we want the government more and more to become the provider, protector, the sugar daddy for those people that then can turn around and turn the screws on us? I mean, from a strategic perspective, if I'm the government, this makes a lot of sense. This makes a lot of sense. Why would you not make sure that all the service providers in your society feel a sense of obligation and connection an affinity with the government? Think back to COVID. I'm going to get, demonetized or whatever. When you've got like your society, your individuals and your citizens kind of poised against a heavy-handed response by the state, and the state could be federal, local, et cetera. Who matters at that point? Well, it's the law enforcement, the public servants, the people that are providing healthcare, et cetera. Those people, that's where you and I interact with these bigger institutions. So this Biden administration, I mean, just from a financial standpoint, this is where a lot of conservatives and Republicans, not necessarily conservatives, but, populists and so on. Sorry. Well, looking through fuzz on the glasses here. I've got this light, obviously, for the stream, and it's like blowing out my glasses. Like, you need to know this. But you get the Biden administration forgiving $6 billion. Well, the $6 billion number is going to get the attention of all kinds of conservatives and populists and commentators screaming about the waste of money. And I think, first of all, sure, we have a spending problem. We have a balanced budget debt problem in this country. But there's a deeper kind of strategy going on here, and this is the state currying favor with the individuals in our society that will enforce the policies of the state. And we are living in a world right now where a lot of the citizenry is not aligned with the interests of the state. And so this can be kind of dangerous. I'm not crying like, hey, look out at Soviet Union, but like these are the kinds of things that lead to a more statist mentality. I do have a problem with this idea also that like you took on that debt voluntarily and you're taking the private property, the wealth, the money of law-abiding, tax-paying citizens, and you're using it to make those private decisions go away. It's like, oh, you took on the debt, and now you have no responsibility for the debt. How's that? So that's a development as of today. You know, the Biden administration is going to continue to use this loan forgiveness stuff to curry favor as you run up to the election. If you remember at the first 2020 election, Biden and his people talked a lot about student loan forgiveness, got a lot of favor in the younger millennial set, people feeling helpless and hopeless. They got $100,000 in debt and a degree in underwater basket weaving, which not economically viable. So, of course, you like a president that's promising to make that go away. The other thing I want to talk about today is the Reddit IPO. Are you guys aware of this Reddit? The online forum, I guess you could call it a forum, the forum to end all forums. I mean, it Reddit really massive. I don't even know how many millions of users Reddit has. Online forum, massive, doing a public offering, initial public offering. It's kind of a big deal. It's today. Today's the day that they're going public. A lot of folks saying that they're oversubscribed for the shares. And it's just interesting to me. I mean, I think this dynamic, it's a little questionable to me, and here's why. I just wonder how successful this is going to be, and I think there's a kind of a theme between these three things that we're going to talk about today. So one thing is, it seems like the Reddit IPO is overvalued. Some people are saying by $6 billion. I mean, it's just like there's a lot of excitement. Essentially, the Wall Street, although it's been, you know, you can make a lot of money in the stock market these days. It's a little volatile, but stock market seems to be defying the fundamentals. Never a good sign. There'll be some pay the piper moment in the future, probably after the election. But there have not been a lot of initial public offerings, not a lot of IPOs, not a lot of companies going public recently over the last while. And so Reddit is one of the newer IPOs, and it's kind of like, hey, maybe the market's going to come back. Maybe we're going to start to see IPOs. I don't know. I mean, what's really interesting is you don't even really see young people starting companies anymore. I remember the 90s and early 2000s, it was like millennials were just nuts in a good way, but they had entrepreneur fever. You just don't see it anymore. Young people are not starting companies. They're not getting married. They're really, I mean, and these are broad strokes. I get I'm painting with a broad brush here, but if you do your own research, I mean, you'll see the numbers bear out kind of the broad statements. I'm sure there are young people starting companies, and I know for a fact there are young people getting married, and I know there are young people having babies, but not like they used to. And it's interesting, you know, you get this IPO drought. There really haven't been that many IPOs. Reddit now, big IPO, a lot of news around that. There's a couple problems. I mean, one of the problems is Reddit to date really doesn't make money. If you go on Reddit, there'll be advertising. So as you're scrolling through, you know, somebody posts a picture of their parents from the 80s and the old school cool subreddit, and you'll see the comments. And as you go through the comments, hey, your parents are beautiful. People are so cool back then. Hey, my dad had hair, you know, haha. But then there'll be an ad. There'll be ads kind of, you know, stitched in throughout as you're going through. So they have a way to make revenue, but they're not profitable. Reddit does not make money. A ton of people. They sell advertising, huge audiences. You see more and more things like media deals. And what I mean by that is, you know, Hollywood's going to, you know, release a movie. They'll have Ask Me Anythings. You know, essentially they'll have a movie star from an upcoming movie or a director do an AMA and Ask Me Anything. You know, the audience can interact. You'll see ads promoting the movie. So they'll do these deals where they're trying to help, you know, promote new product rollouts, new movies, et cetera. So Reddit's got a financial model already, but it doesn't really make money. And so you've got this massive IPO. It's going to go public. It'll be interesting to see where this thing lands today, but massive IPO. and it doesn't make money. Hey, just a real quick shout out. We got Lidosh. What's going on? Welcome. Good to see you. I was wondering, haven't seen any comments. You're the first comment today, although we've had people viewing all along. So welcome. The other thing with Reddit too, I don't know that a truly financial model for Reddit is going to work. Now, I don't know how they keep the lights on, quite frankly. It was acquired a while ago. It was founded by a couple of guys. It merged with a couple other boards, messaging boards. At one point, it was acquired by Condé Nast. I don't know how long Condé Nast had it, but then it rolled out as its own company, an independent company. But I don't really know how Reddit keeps the lights on. It's massive. I can't even imagine the cost for the servers. I mean, just the amount of content. And a lot of, I would imagine a lot, I mean, I know people post photos to Reddit, but a lot of it's just text-based. So it's probably not as heavy as, say, like hosting YouTube. But Reddit's got to cost a lot of money to keep going. But the thing about Reddit is the model's a free model. I mean, what most people experience on Reddit and what they benefit from is the fact that it's free. They come expecting it to be free. So I guess what I'm questioning is if you go an IPO, you've got the pressure to deliver quarterly returns. You got to show profits. You've got investors and so on. You know, what is Reddit's plan? Because you've got millions and millions of users, but these users are used to being there for free. And I'm, you know, it's just kind of a cliche, but you got a lot of neckbeards. You got a lot of dirty, sweaty nerds in their mother's basement. I mean, it's not 100% true, but there is a lot of that on Reddit. A lot of, you know, I'm just going to say like autistic, you know, nerdy guys, you know, that are experts that, you know, actually, you know, you say something and there's a lot of pedantic kind of like, let me correct you. You're not technically right. And a lot of like bravado, like, well, I have a PhD and, you know, molecular anthropology, something that you've never heard of before. And, you know, then they'll go on and on about ancient Greece and the minutiae of the language. And there's just a lot of that stuff. And that'll turn out to be wrong, you know, like, and then somebody say, well, actually, I've got three PhDs in linguistics. And so there's a lot of that on Reddit. But the whole thing is based on a free model. I mean, you can have multiple accounts. It doesn't cost you a nickel. They really don't throttle you. They don't take away products or services or features or functionality based on being free. So I kind of question, like, if their only real revenue model, the only real revenue source is advertising, and they're doing advertising right now, and those ads show up pretty often. This isn't like, oh, every once in a blue moon. There's always an ad. If they're advertising at, like, these interstitials as you're reading through comments, how are they going to be profitable? Like, what are they going to do? And if they start changing the recipe, if you log in as a user for a decade plus, you've been using it for free, and all of a sudden they're going to start taking away features and functionality unless you're willing to pay, I just question, like, what kind of response will they get from their user base? What kind of response will they use? Lidosh is asking, is Reddit not a free platform? Yeah, it is a free platform, but what I'm talking about is today they're going public. They're having an IPO, an initial public offering on Wall Street. They're becoming a publicly traded company as of today, which is going to make them a for-profit publicly traded company, which is going to mean every 3 months they've got to report on profits publicly to the world. How are they doing? They're going to have thousands, if not more, shareholders, hundreds of thousands of shareholders, and they're going to have pressure to be able to become a profitable business. They don't make a profit right now. So as they start to shift and try to find ways to monetize, I think they're going to have a problem. I don't know how easily their audience is going to respond to changes, especially the fact that they've been free for so long. You can go the X route, like Twitter X, like Elon did and said, hey, it's $5 a month, it's $8 a month. And then you get kind of like a verified and maybe you get some extra features. They might be able to do that. But even that, I don't know that that's working for Elon. I don't know that X is turning a ton of profit either with that same model. So I'd be curious to see what they do. The last thing I'll say about this before we move on to BlackRock is that a lot of Reddit's population, Reddit's population attracts a certain kind of person. I was joking before about, you know, dirty nerds living in their mother's basements. But, you know, to be fair, Reddit attracts a certain kind of person. There's a lot of very progressive, very left-leaning, very in love with technology. And so when I say progressive, you know, there's kind of like the social aspect of progressivism. But, you know, very, very materialistic, very science-based. These people believe that they know what's best. They know what the future should look like. They, quote unquote, believe the science. If you bring an alternate view or you push back on something that's, and you say, I think things should be more traditional, I mean, they just shout you down. It's a bit of an echo chamber for a progressive, positivistic, scientistic, if scientistic is a word, worldview. And so you've got millions of users of a certain persuasion. Of course, there are other kinds of people on Reddit, but they tend to be quiet. Even if you spend some time, like take a traditional topic like Christianity, and you spend some time in the Christianity subreddit, you'll see all kinds of discussions of people confused about, you know, is sex before marriage okay? And like all these progressive kind of discussions. And there's not a lot of room for a more traditional worldview, even in some of the more traditional subreddits. So to me, I think that when you roll in the whole political aspect and the need for profits, and you've kind of got a subset, you would think that Reddit represents a cross-section of human society, but it really is a collection of progressive, materialistic people that are used to free services and, you know, championing certain political views. Well, I don't know how well that's going to play going forward in the market, in the marketplace. I think that's going to be a bit of a challenge. Lidosh says, sometimes it's stupid to do things not for people but for money. If business produces only money, this is a bad business. Henry Ford. Lidosh saying essentially, it's not always good to go just for the money. And if a business is only focused on money, it's not necessarily a good business. And I agree with that. I don't have a problem with that. I guess my curiosity around Reddit, they're going public. I think it's a foolish move. Not because I think, oh, Reddit, it's a public, you know, like Wikipedia. We all kind of treat Wikipedia like it's this, like it's a set of encyclopedias on our bookshelves. It's just like this for the human good source of knowledge. And God forbid it becomes publicly owned or for profit. We treat Reddit that way too. It's almost like a public utility, and we all need water. We all need electricity, and so this should be a public utility. It shouldn't be for profit, and we kind of treat Reddit that way. I don't know that Reddit is as valuable as we think it is. I think people get a lot of enjoyment from it. I think it's valuable to the people that enjoy it. But as a society, is Reddit that necessary? Not really. And if they want to go public, that's their business. I don't have like a moral quandary or issue with Reddit going public, but I just wonder how are they going to turn a profit based on some of the dynamics of their business and their inability so far to really monetize the business. I don't know what going public, like throwing more money at Reddit is not going to help it become more profitable unless they have some kind of strategy. And that's the piece that I'd be curious to learn more about. All right, well, let's turn to our final topic today, and that is BlackRock going or getting in trouble. I should say, I was going to say going public. I'm not mentally shifting quickly enough here. Mentally shifting quickly enough. That's a lot of LYs in there. So just a few days ago on the 19th, today's the 21st, but on the 19th, there was an article that there was a news piece that came out that said the state of Texas decided, this was on Tuesday, to pull its money, $8.5 billion from BlackRock Investments. So the state of Texas pulled $8.5 billion from BlackRock. So essentially, there's a school fund. I'm just going to take a look here at the article. Aaron Kinsey, he's the Republican chairman of the Texas State Board of Education. So Aaron Kinsey is an elected official. He's a Republican, got elected, and he is the chairman of the Texas State Board of Education. So he oversees the Texas Board of Education. They've got a $53 billion school fund. So they've got this $53 billion, and I would imagine this is funded from taxes collected over the years. And often what they will do is they'll collect these taxes, but then they will invest that. So it might be pension money, it might be taxes, but they've invested this money or parts of this money in the market to try to get a return on it. And usually they'll invest it in safe investments. They're not taking wild, hopefully, not taking wild risks with it. But they're investing it to try to turn $1 into $1.20, $1.50, $2, so that over time their fund is growing. And so this would be an institutional investor, Texas, state of Texas. And they had $8.5 billion invested with BlackRock. And they said to BlackRock, we're pulling our money. That's a big chunk. That's a huge chunk. Now, the thing is, Texas has a law that it put into place in 2021 that says it's going to boycott or it's going to limit the amount that a Texas-based institution, a government institution, can invest in funds that boycott oil and gas. So essentially, a lot of these funds out there are saying with their ESG initiatives, hey, we're not going to invest in oil and gas because it's bad for the environment. We got CO2 emissions and we're killing the penguins and the swans and the world's going to die and we got climate change. And so, you know, these funds are saying they're not going to invest in any oil and gas, you know, energy type investments. They're not going to buy shares in Exxon as an example. And so Texas turned around and said, well, we're going to say that governments under our purview, you know, municipal, county, state, probably more state level, you really are limited in the types of funds you can invest in. You can't invest in these funds that are going to boycott. And so this $8.5 billion was invested with BlackRock. Well, BlackRock is one of the largest ESG investors in the world. I mean, they are all in on ESG informed investing, and Larry Fink, who's their CEO, I think he's a founder as well. I could be wrong. Now, Fink is like 71 years old. He's worth $1.2 billion. He's a Democrat, and Fink has been pushing the company, leading the company into this ESG initiative, where they're pulling investments out of energy. They're not supporting any type of energy investments, and they're going to be putting all their money into sustainable energy. They're going to be carbon sequestration, any type of technology that gets us off of the old hydrocarbon model, that's oil, that we're on right now, and gets us into new energy sources, be it wind, solar, et cetera. And so Texas said, well, fine, that's your prerogative, but we're going to pull our money. Well, it's funny because BlackRock turned around and said, it's so funny, BlackRock condemned the fund's decision and on X added, politics should never outweigh performance, especially for taxpayers. So politics shouldn't outweigh performance. Now, what I thought was great about that, so essentially what BlackRock is saying is, oh, Texas, you're putting your politics before the performance of the market. We deliver great returns to your people, your taxpayers, but you Republicans essentially are using your political platform and you're putting your politics before investment results. Here's what's rich about that. And if you listen to Larry Fink, he would not agree with this. I've watched some interviews of him. Essentially, when you accuse Texas of putting politics before performance, I guess you have to look in the mirror when you say that, because you're structuring your whole investment strategy based on political positions. You're saying we're all in for ESG. You're all in for ESG, and yet you're turning around and saying that you're damning Texas for putting politics first. So when you're saying ESG, you're saying, well, you know, equity, sustainability, governance. you're investing in companies that are making race decisions, meaning we want our workforce to be equitable and, you know, diverse. It's all that diversity and all that kind of stuff and inclusion. That's one piece of it. The sustainability, we want to make sure that it's all about renewable energy. And then on top of it, you're making all your investment decisions based on ESG. Hey, Junaid, just a quick shout out. Junaid just joined the stream, the chat. Nice to see you, man. Thanks for joining. Glad to have you along. So you've got BlackRock making all of its investment decisions, the trillions of dollars. I mean, I can't even imagine how much money BlackRock has under under its management. It's an insane amount of money. If Texas alone can pull $8.5 billion, Texas was not probably their biggest customer, I'm sure. So anyway, Larry Fink, the CEO alone, is worth $1.2 billion. That's just one guy. BlackRock's a massive company with investments all over the globe. And Larry Fink's, you know, Larry Fink, he sits with, he drives governments. I don't mean to say he controls them like some sinister guy in the back room. Maybe he does. But he's got stroke. That guy sits down and talks to a leader of a country. That leader of the country is listening. I mean, they're working together. But long and short of it, you've got a company whose all their investment decisions are being made by political positions. What I mean by that is you could say, well, Mike, climate change is real. There's a lot of conflicting data. I know people are like, well, the science. First of all, the people that always claim the science are not scientists. They're just some schlub that watches television, and they've been told the science is science. And I'm not even in this live stream trying to say that climate change isn't real. What I'm saying is people that claim they believe the science aren't scientists. They're hearing from a certain set of scientists. If other scientists say, no, we don't agree, they go, well, those guys are quacks. Well, how do you know that? You're not a scientist. How are you judging that those people do or do not know what they're talking about? And so you get these situations where you've got this political divide, and everybody, all of us, are looking at these things through political lenses. BlackRock is guilty of this. They're making investments based on political positions. They're making investments based on politics, whether it's diversity, whether it's sustainability, whether it's governance issues in businesses. They're not saying our primary concern is to be profitable. Our primary concern really is to build a better future, a better world. So what BlackRock sees, and Fink has said this outright, what they see their role as, their role is to use capital, to use finance to build a better world. And what that means for them isn't to just create jobs so that you and I can go out there and live our lives and care for our families. No, it's to change the structures, to put pressure. Fink talks about this. He wants to put pressure on governments and on businesses and on societies to come into line with a more progressive vision of the future, one in which technology and AI and all these other things will solve all of man's tough problems. Essentially, what they are doing, whether they admit it or not, and when I say admit, I don't mean that they're sneaking around, just whether they realize it or not, whether they admit it to themselves, and if they do admit it to themselves, whether they admit it publicly, is they have embraced a vision of society that's utopian. They're trying to create a utopia. There's a desire to create a heaven on earth. It's inside every human being. We have this desire to create heaven on earth. And what ends up happening is to do that, you have to decide what is good, what is right, what is true. You can't do that saying, look, I'm not making value judgments here. You have to make value judgments when you're trying to create a better future. The problem that you run into, and I'm not trying to attack anybody for wanting to create a better future. That's a good desire. As a father, I've always wanted to create a better world for my children. As a husband, I want to do what I can to make life better for my spouse. As a neighbor, I'm looking out. I'm in my home office. I look out. I see my neighbor's houses. I want to be a good neighbor. I want our neighborhood to be better. I want our city to be better. I want our state to be better. All of us have a desire on one level or another to help make the world a better place. That's not bad. Here's where you run into trouble. You run into trouble when you're like, well, what constitutes better? What if I decide that it's better for children to have two parents, not a single parent family? Okay. How will you feel if I start saying we need to force people to stay married? How would you feel about that in our society, our liberal society? And I say liberal meaning small L, meaning you've got freedoms. I have the liberty. It's a liberal society. I can sit and say what I want, you know, for the most part. until I get, you know, they break into the room and drag me away or something. But it's a liberal society where there's liberty in the society. So you have the liberty to split up a marriage. Well, what if I say, I don't think that's good. I think that's harming children to such a degree that we need to make laws that force people to stay together. So you get a woman who has a husband who's cheating on her, physically abusive, the kids are in danger, whatever. But we're going to make laws to make sure that you have to stay in that marriage. How would you feel about that? I think most people in this world would be outraged by that. It would be an outrage, and they'd be, you know, trotting out Atwood's, what was that novel with all the women, you know, in their red robes? Why can't I think of the name of that? But, you know, they'd be all these tropes about conservatives and patriarchal societies and all this BS. But at the same time, we have no problem with someone like Larry Fink, one man essentially deciding what's good for society. You get these people with concentrated power, the Bill Gates, Larry Finks, Elon Musks, and Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, along with some key politicians, and they get to decide what's good. Now, I understand we can't just have a society where nobody knows what's good. You have to have some shared values. I get that. But at what point do we realize, like, when you allow specific individuals to decide what's good and what should be, and these individuals have so much power, they got so much money, so much influence, so much power. You know, what happens to you and I? So, you know, BlackRock saying, like, oh no, how dare Texas put politics before profits for the taxpayers? It's the most disingenuous thing that they could say. It's so disingenuous. I mean, give me a break. That's like the kettle calling the pot black, the classic, you know, little idiom there. BlackRock is all about politics. They have a political vision of the future that they're trying to construct. This is a vision of big government, big corporations, a corporatist world where giant corporations and giant government, one world government, work together to create the world that they see as best. They want the tokenization of investing and assets that's using blockchain. They want all kinds of control. They want the individuals to have to get in lockstep in line and do what's good for you. See, the thing is, you can't be trusted to know what's good for you. That's the problem with this world. Too many people are doing the wrong thing. And if we can stop them from doing the wrong thing, force them to do what's right, we can push and manipulate and force them to do what we know is good, the world will be a better place. Well, that never ends well. Look at Chairman Mao back in communist China. Was sure that there were certain issues, like these, you know, sparrows were such a problem. He wiped out the sparrow population, and then the insect population went crazy. We're going to become an industrial force in the world, and they put up all these little forges in the villages, and everybody had to bring out their pots and pans, any metal they had, so they could melt it down and start making things. You know, it'd be this great collectivist thing. Well, the next thing you know, first of all, it was low quality. The forges didn't work well. It was low quality metal. The stuff was useless, and people had destroyed all their cooking utensils and plows and tools to work the ground to feed themselves. And hundreds of millions, I mean, tens of millions of people died. Some people argue more. This was the 50-year, what was it, the Great Leap Forward. But this was the idea of an individual and a group of individuals that knew what was best, and they were going to create this utopian society. This stuff never ends well. And you can go, oh, well, that was back then, and Mao was crazy. Really? Okay, so you tell me who's at the top of our food chain in our society that's not crazy. People sit and say, well, I don't like Donald Trump. He's addicted. He's nuts. He's addicted. You think Joe Biden's any better? All these people at the top are a bunch of sycophants. Just look at what Hayek says about politics. It always attracts the worst kind of character because those are the people that want power the most. The good people don't really want power. Really good people don't want to control other people. Really good people don't want to force their way of living on other people. Like, they might stand up for what's right and good. I'm not saying that they just mind their own business. You see a kid being beat up in the streets by two adults, you're going to run out there, if you're a good person, and try to save the kid. I'm not saying, like, good people are just like, hey, it's none of my business if that five-year-old can't fight back. That's his own fault. No. You jump in and do what's right. So I'm not saying, like, you know, good people mind their business, but good people aren't looking for power. They're not looking to force their worldview on everybody. They're just saying, look, I want to do right by my neighbors, by my family. I want to be moral, ethical. I want to work hard. I want to enjoy some of the fruits of my labor, so on. That, and people are not asking for a lot. Those are the people that are just like, I'm not running for office. And I ran for office, so I'm probably a sycophant. But Hayek, and I think he's right, says the types of people attracted to power, the very kinds of people that shouldn't have it. These are people that you know, have character flaws, and they want power for their own benefit. And that's just never good. And you get these people like a Larry Fink, a Bill Gates, all these folks, they get to the top. Anthony Fauci, they claim that, you know, oh, I just have good intentions. I just want to help. They're so small. Oh, I'm so smart. I know more about being human and excellent than anybody else. So I'm going to tell you what it should look like. And they're able to force on us things that often don't go well. I mean, history is littered with these kind of, you know, good intentions, quote unquote, gone awry, and people end up dying. So it's not good. Anyway, so that's what's going on. Now, what's interesting about this, you know, Texas, if you missed this, Texas is an oil and gas state. And that's, you can say that Texas is being political, but they're really looking out for their own interests. They're an oil and gas state. That's what they produce. So for them to turn, for BlackRock to say, well, shame on you for putting politics first, this isn't just like petty politics. This is a huge, huge aspect of the Texan economy. Oil and gas is a massive part of their economy. So for them to say, hey, look, we're not going to enable the hand that holds the knife to our neck, because that's essentially what BlackRock is doing. BlackRock's saying, we're going to divest of all hydrocarbon, you know, oil and gas technology, which is essentially saying we're going to divest of stuff that's, you know, this is going to be a huge blow to Texas. Well, why is Texas obligated to enable that hand holding the knife to their neck? Why is that expected? And this is what I wanted to touch on before. We were talking about the Biden admin forgiving all the debt of public workers. We're talking about Reddit and its progressive view and the IPO and corporatism and BlackRock. We have got to start realizing that we have no obligation to give comfort, to give material support, to make way, to allow the success of those who want to destroy us. And that's just what it boils down to. And we're being browbeaten, like, you know, you should get behind these initiatives, you know, you should support these things. These are great things. You should invest in the Reddit IPO. Well, I mean, if you agree with Reddit's values, if you agree with Reddit people, et cetera, that's fine, do it. But you shouldn't be investing and supporting and helping those that are bent on destroying you and removing you and making a different world that doesn't have room for you. So we could unpack that even more. We don't have time. We're up on the 50-minute mark. I'm going to take a couple questions here. I appreciate you guys hanging out with me. Let's see what Lidosh says. Lidosh says, the BlackRock have money all over the world. All dictators have some money to this company. This is what you can name globalism. Yeah. So, and for those listening, Lidosh from Russia. So I'm just kind of skimming. I'll paraphrase. But yeah, they've got all kinds of money. They're pouring money into all kinds of government, you know, officials, propping people up, et cetera. And totally global. I mean, they're an American-based company, but they're a global business, and they're involved way beyond America. I mean, they're involved across the board, many, many countries. It's interesting. Now, I do know that, you know, BlackRock, listening to Larry Fink, his belief is, look, if we don't do this stuff, like for instance, with climate change, if we don't invest, if we don't divest of hydrocarbons and invest in future technologies, there won't be a market for us to invest in. And I believe he's sincere when he says that. I don't think that, I mean, I don't know what to think about these multi-billionaire people. But I kind of take Fink at his word that he's looking forward, saying, look, we have to be smart about this. So he obviously believes most of what he hears about climate change and thinks it's a crisis. You know, I'm not persuaded. I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm just not persuaded that it is a crisis. But obviously, Fink believes this. And I think in his mind, this is a matter of us even being around in the future. Like, if we don't do this now, there's not going to be a market to invest in the future. And how can I be a multi-billionaire if there's no market, right? So, okay, fair enough. The thing that I don't like is just you've got so much power and the ability to manipulate and to drive things that it's like, well, what happens to people like us? Where's our voice? And we just have to shut up and do what we're told. That doesn't work for me. So that's that. But what do you guys think? What are your thoughts on some of these current events and even my comments? I'll stick around for a few minutes here, see if we get any comments. What I'll do actually is I'll wrap up for the audio show, but I'll stick around online and we can kind of chit-chat a little bit. So I guess what I'll say is to everybody that's listening to this, or if you've watched afterwards, thank you so much for joining me. I'm very grateful. Love you guys. Make sure to check out my newsletter. You can sign up for it by going to mikegaston.com. And on the homepage, there's an opportunity to sign up for the newsletter. It usually goes out about once a week. Sometimes I skip a week here or there, but it's free, and you might enjoy that. Just go to mikegaston.com. And again, thanks for listening. Love each and every one of you, and I'll catch you all in the next episode. Cheers.